Hi and welcome to What's Next. This is a new episode, and as always, Andrea and I, we are your hosts. So enjoy this week's episode, and we start right away. Have fun listening.
Okay, nice to meet you. Thank you so much for taking the time. How are you?
Fine, quite good, thank you.
Yeah, for me as well, thank you.
Okay, then we start with the first question. Please introduce your office. Who are you?
We are Jens and Laura. Jens is actually the one on the other side of the screen. We have an office in Belgium, a rather small scale office, which has mostly focuses mostly on residential buildings. But we usually say that our office designs projects that are based on the environment. Where we do.
Would you like to add something, Jens?
No, I think what Laurent says is quite what we do. We work on two locations also in Flanders because we had the feeling it was not Laurent and me. We know each other from high school. We started an office together with the idea to make something. Some good architecture. That was the main idea, but decided not to be just in one place, but work where we live, and not just only in one central place. We design at 110 kilometers far from each other, but we don't have the feeling that bothers us very much.
So you are actually friends.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes.
Really good friends. Doing really nice and beautiful architecture. I saw your project on the website. Really beautiful. But we will come back later to this. Mm-hmm. Normally, we start the interview with some warm-up questions. Mm-hmm. Personal warm-up questions. Like, first question, what's your favorite drink? Alcoholic, non-alcoholic?
Dark and stormy. And alcohol.
Yeah, I would also say alcoholic, and then maybe you can Negroni call it. That's maybe my favorite.
Okay, but it's not a favorite drink, cocktail, something specific, like gin tonic.
Well, Negroni is the
white
same.
Russian.
Negroni doesn't have a soda or water with it. It's only Campari, vermouth, and gin.
Okay, next question. If you could develop a skill overnight, what would you wish for? Anything.
Well, I would actually once like to fly. I think it would be very nice to have the ability to fly. Yeah, I think it's a very different kind of feeling, except of how we are actually move ourselves into the world.
Do you dream sometimes that you could fly?
I didn't have a dream yet on how it would feel to be.
And then you wake up and you say, oh, just a dream.
I never had that, but I guess it's quite exciting.
Maybe tonight after we talked about maybe. It. And you, Jens?
Well, flying should also be very great. Maybe the power to move Earth should be nice to make some... It's a really handy tool, I guess, to make some models. Maybe, I don't know. But it's a crazy idea, but a skill overnight, I think, not that difficult, not that easy.
No. To answer now right away about...
What would you like to have?
Yeah, that's a difficult question, I guess. Yes. The question is also, does it need to be realistic or not, the skill?
No, it doesn't need to be realistic.
No. Then to move Earth would be great, like you have like the Earth Masters in the Avatar or something like it. I don't know. Just crazy idea.
Really good answer. And now last question. What's your favorite hobby besides architecture?
I would actually say that it's wining and dining. I like to do sports, but I also like to have a good time with friends and drink and eat something. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's the same time.
You two together.
Yeah, as well.
Not that much, to be honest, but
no. But we have actually every week in the office we kind of do a drink, even though we're far away from each other. We have, like we do with you now, a remote drink in the office with the people that are in Lokeren and then the people that are in Westhuizen, connected to our through the internet.
Exactly. Fridays. Yeah. At 1 p.m.
Yeah, we don't start at 1 p.m.
A little bit early, but no.
Indeed.
Or late.
Or late. Yeah. I don't know. But no, it's great just to wine dine. It's part of maybe a little bit part of our culture, ma'am, even in Flanders. I don't know.
Yeah, especially now during this time. I think it gets way more important to get together, and even if it's just through Skype or whatever, to have a nice dinner together or a drink and talk. And
yeah, just to be normal, talk about normal things. Also,
yes.
We try to look for it. If Laurent and I, we see each other, not to talk about architecture that much, because there are still some other things in life than just architecture.
Good point.
I'm actually quite lucky. My wife has nothing to do with architecture. So when I'm home and I'm with the kids and with my wife, we never talk about architecture.
The topic
really?
Is forever.
Yeah, but actually with us, it's the same. We barely talk about architecture, even though
it's not actually true. But
I don't talk about architecture.
Okay, for me it's a bit harder, but I mean, we try to separate the two things.
Indeed.
No, I think it's really important. Otherwise, it never stops.
Exactly, yeah. Because the life of me, architecture is really important, but it's also important to have a good balance. Mm-hmm. And we always focus on that.
And it's already hard to have a good balance when you're an architect.
Exactly.
I think we all agree
on this point.
Yeah.
So, but now back to the architecture. I mean, so you are a young architecture office. What's your philosophy?
Well, as I already explained a little bit, it's maybe I should start with explaining a little bit where our name comes from. We have the name Taupe Architecture, and Taupe actually comes from the Greek word topos, which actually means place.
Yeah.
So for us, a place where we do and make projects is very important. That's the starting point of what we do.
I think that this already explains a lot. Also, I think we both didn't know. I mean, of course, we noticed the name, but we didn't know this, and this is really interesting. So all your philosophy come between the relationship between the place, so topos, and, okay.
Indeed. The funny fact as well is that in Belgium, in the west of Flanders and the east of Flanders, where we both are, tope actually also means together. Yeah, so it's like how you say it's like slang of being together. So in these two dialects, so there was a second meaning of our name, of course.
It's a double layer because we didn't want to have it also. We wanted to work together, but we didn't want an office that had our name, to be honest, because for us, also the employees we have and the people we work with are as important as we are. So we don't feel it has to belong to us. It's more something in general, a kind of philosophy, a way of working, a way of thinking.
Yeah.
Do your employees appreciate that?
We hope so.
Yeah.
Do they know that?
We actually
now they can listen to the episode and then they know.
Yeah, indeed.
We will get back to that later. I don't know. No, I think they appreciate it because it's also the way we work. We have like the Friday drink, but that's about just getting together, not about architecture. But we also have our moments that the two offices come together and discuss architecture, discuss our projects. Because we have like the philosophy, the more eyes you have on a project, the less blind spots you have on a project. Because everybody has his history, his view on architecture. If everybody gives his opinion, we think the project only gets better.
Yeah, this is connected also to the next question I would like to ask. So, for example, how do you start a project? Is there a set of rules you stick to? or I don't know, would you like to explain the process with an example or some?
Well, we actually start the project, of course, with having a brief with the future client or the client at the moment. And then we ask them what they want, but we also like to know how they live, for example. And for us, it's actually quite important. We have the fact that the place where we want to build is very important, but also the people who will live in there. In our projects, we actually quite often see that they are very different because of the people we work for. We don't stick to rules in our projects. The only rule in a way is that we want to try to make good architecture. We will never take a project that doesn't give us a feeling where we can do interesting things, or where we have the feeling that the client doesn't want to doesn't want us to put all effort we can put in there. That's something we never do.
Okay. And what exactly do you mean by good architecture?
But that's a very difficult.
That's a very
that's a question that I think we can solve the whole day with it. But for us, it's kind of one of the important things in our project is actually the detailing, where we go very far in it. Yeah, but is that good architecture? I don't know. For us, good architecture is also, but that's also, yeah, it has to do with how people feel in their buildings. If our client after some years and we see them, we haven't seen them and we see them back and we ask how they are, and they say that they are very happy with where they live, that's actually for us making good architecture.
The best compliment also.
Yeah.
So let's say that the first step is to have a relation, a connection with the clients, understand their lifestyle, what they need, and then start the first process. But for example, if the client, this is probably also about good architecture, if the clients has some priority that is not agree with your way of thinking, I don't know, in the residential can be like, I don't know, elevator in one house or something like you don't agree, it's just an example. How do you deal with that? How much is important the idea and the priority of the client, and how much is the your idea that you have about something in the architectural process? So if you are not agree on something that the clients really wants, how do you deal with that?
That's also difficult, because we try to work around it. We are convinced that you also, when we have the first meeting, there has to be a click also. There has to be a connection in between. If that... With the first meeting, if we are too far apart, it's better not to start the project together, because you're together on this adventure maybe for 1, 2, 3 years together, and if there isn't a click, that's already a difficult thing. But it's true, sometimes in the process of the designing, there are some problems that occur on philosophy or no matter what. But we also try, we do that with the first meeting, but also when we have the project, we try to understand also why people want something, because we try to read between the lines what is really the problem and what should be really the solution. And I agree, that's not an easy thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I believe. So if they say, we really want those 5 columns in front of the house, do you do it or not?
No, I think on the architecture thing, what's quite interesting is that in a way that architecture has, it's very far from what people usually understand. Mm-hmm. So for us, when the discussion, one of the things that we often say to each other is that we lose the color of the kitchen and the color of the bathroom. But that's fine for us. If we only lose that, and we can do the rest of what we want and making the details right and making the house feeling as it should be, then we don't mind about the color of the kitchen. But what's more important is, as you say, that if they want to say, if they say, for example, we want these 5 columns and we think it's actually stupid to do so, we will actually tell them. But we will maybe not directly tell them, but propose something which is more interesting, that they don't need to think about these 5 columns.
So the bigger picture is more important than fighting about the color of the kitchen or the bathroom.
Yeah, indeed.
We will always try.
Yeah, yeah.
We engage yourself always to try.
But yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes you just have to accept and see, okay, but we did the big picture.
Yeah, and if all the mess is fine, we can
if it doesn't break the house also or the building or it's just a matter of or taste.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's not a big thing.
If we talk about clients, you are a really young architecture office. First, why did you want to become self-employed? And second, who was your first client?
Well, our first clients, that's actually quite easy. They were friends. And that's, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. that's with most of the offices how it starts.
And yeah, it's seriously like this.
Yeah.
And you keep the friendship yet?
Yeah, yeah.
No, they're not friends anymore.
We have worked quite often with friends and none of the projects actually exploded. So that's quite fine. But why did we want to become self-employed? That's maybe a more difficult question. I think Jens and I had a very good relationship in school as well when doing architect. We're very different. Both of us are very different, but very complementary as well. So maybe it was because of we had some friends asking us to do projects. At one point, it became too much projects to handle ourselves or to handle while working for another office. And then you have to jump in a way. And we don't, you never know if it's if that's going to work. But so far, we're quite happy.
Have you ever been afraid of do this jump?
No, maybe not. You're of course always a little bit doubting to do so, but no, maybe not, because we had both of us had a good relationship where we worked before, and I'm quite sure that if it wouldn't have worked, that we could maybe go back.
Okay. Yeah, because as an architect, you do not need that much of investments. You need yourself, your creative brain, and your time. In the beginning, a lot of time goes to waste, but.
Yeah.
Both Laurent and me were very motivated, I guess. We always had the late night, and still have the late night calls. We design together, we do everything together, and it simply works. That's why also when you need to do this on your own, mm-hmm. I guess you have a lot of more doubts. Now we were in this together, so you fight your way through together also.
You're always support
each other. And it makes a good balance between. Mm-hmm. When you're already with two, it makes a good balance. Mm-hmm.
So you would suggest young people or not so young people who want to be self-employed, not too much of thinking, just doing. And then if you don't risk, you can't win.
Yeah, indeed.
Yes, that's for sure.
But I think that's with everything, even if it's architecture or something else. If you don't try, I mean, I think most of the people that do great things in the world, they have been falling. So it's okay to fall, and it's okay to learn from what you didn't do right. And yeah, so in a way, we weren't scared to do so.
That sounds really good. I'm always a little scared, and then I overthink. And then I can't sleep.
But I think that also this is part of the process. If you're not scared, you don't have adrenaline, you are not really motivated.
Yeah, you're not trying hard enough.
I think you always need some fear. Otherwise, I mean, it would be too easy.
Yeah.
But this is
my
point of view, unfortunately, because I also overthink.
So we both overthink.
Yeah, but the good thing with this is when we start to overthink, we also have each other, and then the other comes with another eye and the other from the offices. So, yeah, we try not to overthink too much.
Is it possible to do home office in your office?
Yeah, we are at home, both of us.
Ah.
Why? After all this talk, do you want to apply?
Do you need someone?
We can always use people.
Okay, but that's a good point. So the future...
And which is the relation in the first step, so in the concept, between you and your employees? Do you honestly, do they take part to this first design process, or on the first step, it's something that start between you two and then it's share with your employees?
I think that's mostly how it works. Mostly, most of the times, Jens and I will go to the site. We will first go with the client. Later on, we go on our own without the client, because it's more interesting to talk about the site when the client's not there, and because we see other things than probably they do. And then both of us kind of start to make a sketch that can be very rough on what our first thoughts are.
Then first feelings, even sometimes.
First feelings indeed. And then we get together, we put them together, and at that point we get the employees come in as well, and we both have our first sketches, our first ideas, and then we Jens and I come together, the employees come with it, and then we start to discuss about it.
Why? So
go on.
No, is always the sketch some volumetrical sketch, or can be also like a feeling, like a line?
What program do you use
for sketching?
The pencils,
paper and pencils. Of course.
And then if you draw AutoCAD, Archicad, Revit, Rhino,
we use AutoCAD. We actually, the pencil is our main friend in the beginning. That's what we work with.
We always have a lot of problems with AutoCAD. Right?
And sometimes.
And why?
I mean, we used to work with Revit, so sometimes when we need to use AutoCAD, it's a bit tough. But AutoCAD, let's say, it's old school a bit sometimes, but old but gold, I would say. Because if you really need to draw something, sometimes it's helpful to have Revit 3D model, but especially in a smaller scale. It's not that important. I think that if you make a plan that you can easily read, a plan that is really communicative, you don't need so many tools, so many 3D or so many rendering.
No, we try to propose and present often projects only with sketches, models, and most of the times the 3D render comes after the design is already done.
Because we have the feeling, the main advantage for us, I think, with AutoCAD is also you just draw lines. You don't draw walls already. You need to decide which interior material you need, which exterior material you need. And so it doesn't also limit us in our way of thinking. We don't start with, we want a building in concrete, we want a building in wood. It's like we only need to focus on how the plan is made, what we see, how is the environment, and not really on the materials. If you start designing on the Revit, I think you already need to decide the details, the materials. And that's like a kind of freedom we still want to keep till the end.
Yeah.
And you already lock yourself in a cage of mental cage that you have to work with Revit, for example. You lose a bit of freedom.
That's for us how it feels. But it's also the same with why that we use sketches instead of renders often, is that because of the client, when you start to have a 3D model and a render to present them, then they lose all of their imagination. They start to feel maybe they don't like the color, maybe they don't like a chair that's in the model. While if you make sketches and your chair doesn't look as a chair should be, they don't mind. They know that it's a chair.
And they also expect more and more and more, because they think, oh, it was so easy for you to do, so we want to see more. Yeah. And then, for example, I did a render with Enscape, and we sent it to the client, and he was like, yeah, okay, that's good for the first impression. And I was like, what?
Indeed.
Okay.
And actually, what you say, it's right, because sometimes the client, which are not used to 3D or to render, if they see some render, they focus on some small object that it's not important, actually.
That's not the case.
Exactly. So maybe they talk about the chair that you put in the render, that it was there just for show the scale of the mm-hmm. project. And then it was, so actually this is, yeah, it's an aspect that it's really true.
That's why we push the 3D images really at the end, because you start with the big scale and you go smaller and smaller and smaller. When we do that with, we still work a lot with models also.
Mm-hmm.
And there we feel you still need a lot of imagination, but you already have like the scale, you don't need the materials right away, but you give the client something they understand, but mm-hmm. because there are a lot of people that cannot read any plans, to be honest,
no.
but you give something they can understand, they can take with them something physic and paper.
And what's also true is that the model also gives, you can't lie with the model. A very easy thing is to lie with a 3D model. You can,
yes.
With the camera can get wider, but it's also true that if someone looks into a model, that they have the feeling like when you're in your office, for example, now as well, what's behind you and what's in front of you, that's something you notice. When you look into a model, you do that as well. In a 3D model, they don't know that. They really start to lose where they are. Their imagination is gone, and they just focus on one image. While it's actually on the spatial concept issues.
That's true. But if we talk about home office, model making, renders, how do you imagine the future living and working place? Like with this home office topic, will those two worlds come together at some point and we just stay at home and come together once a week maybe to talk in some rented room?
Because we saw that we were actually our offices had the scale and we both have them at home, and our offices, we actually worked already remote, Jens and I, and we had this way of working. But what we saw with our employees is that the moment that they need to work at home, that they really start to lose the feeling with the office. They don't feel sometimes the stress that's there, the fun that's there. So the dedication to the office starts to decrease. And while it's actually better to bring them in, I'm not sure that we like before, like the big offices, and they all have now possibilities to work at home, and in some other branches it's probably possible, but I think we felt their need to come to the office at some point.
I guess we are all social beings, and we can have a little part that is digital and remote. But I don't think it will fill the whole gap.
No. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of reading. The reading in between the lines with people when you're together is very important. And you lose that working digital. Maybe in the future when we have these kind of glasses and we sit in the same room where we think we feel each other, maybe that would help. But I'm not sure.
That's true. The virtual reality glasses, you mean?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
But I'm impressed that you can actually allow yourself to take so much time for this first steps of designing something, like really taking time, drawing, thinking about, because we had also a lot of examples where there's basically no time to do so, and you have to be fast, 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 and there's the deadline there coming. So this process of actually creating something beautiful and individual gets lost at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this will also happen to you at one point?
We hope not, because we say no to projects when we have no time. So, or we say people that they need to wait.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't want to wait, yeah, then it's a pity. But as you say, we don't want to do project half.
Yes. No, I like this really straightforward opinion.
It's always quality over quantity.
Yeah.
And
not always that easy, but try to that kind of
sometimes it's hard to say no, mm-hmm. but it's better. Mm-hmm. to do something with high quality and good instead to do a lot yeah. of project just to do it. And yeah. just another question about this. How important is the materials choice in your design process? So you talk about the relation with the land, obviously, with the client. So do you have any particular material that you like to use, probably related to the territory of Belgium or Flanders?
But, oh, that's a good question. If I can add something, maybe also if you look to the side of climate change and climate crisis, whatever. Do you think about this a lot when you choose materials? Or is it, no, here would fit a really good concrete house? Or how important is that?
Well, we both have a love for concrete, so that's a little bit of a pity. Eh? We both have a love for concrete.
End of discussion. Okay.
No, but it's often it's we think about that, but
we try to make balance.
Yes, yeah, indeed, and but it also has to do. For example, we did a project where we had it's a very big transformation of a house. And then we really start to think, okay, how can we get this house future proof? Because it was an old house, not insulated. Then there's ways to for example, say, no, we don't want to touch the foundation and make it bigger just because of the building skin that gets bigger. And that brings us to, for example, in that project, to a choice of having a wooden building facade. Jens and I both have kind of a love for buildings which are kind of massive because of the thermal, how you say it, it's inertia, I think. The building mass is quite important to have a nice
inner climate.
But yeah, we think about it, but it's very difficult sometimes at some points. We're not the ones at that point. Let's say that, okay, we can't use concrete anymore.
Mm-hmm. We talk about this a lot, to be honest, because it's something it's gonna change. It's already changing. It's on the roll, but we don't have the feeling that the one answer is better than the other. If you use the materials on the right way, we guess you can do better. For example, a concrete building that with the mass we have, you have the humidity, but also the temperature is regulated by the mass of the concrete. For us, this can be better than like a wooden structure that needs a lot of ventilation, like a lot of air conditioning, where you don't have like the carbon dioxide exposure at the first step of the material, but you have it later. For us, it's all in balance.
Yeah, and it's something we often talk about, because also mostly in Belgium, we are often quite how we say it, jealous about the houses in, for example, Vorarlberg, where they say that they are passive houses and they have a lot of glass and so on. In Belgium, making a passive house with a lot of glass is actually impossible because of the rules. But we also have our philosophy is as well that, for example, people who have a lot of daylight in their house, they also get more happy. More happy people actually also means that there's less people that need to go to a mentalist or to the clinics because they are depressed. That actually has a very big social cost. So it's for us, it's when we say that our clients that in a lot of projects, when it's a great day in their house, they never should put on a light except for if at night.
Mm-hmm.
So and living with the seasons, with your area, with natural light is also very important to us. Maybe one of the main focuses for us.
For us also. Ecology or climate change awareness also has to do with the base. A good plan is more ecological than like a bad plan for us. So it's multi-layered. It's it's not only materials, it's not only plan, it's not only techniques, it's not only insulation, it's a combination of all those those kind of things. If you make a good building that lasts 100 years, or you make a bad building that will be destructed after 20 years, you already have advantages on that level also.
Mm-hmm. At that point, I would like to ask for your opinion of artificial intelligence towards architecture, because there are those algorithms that give you like 10 or 20 possible situations how your house can be built, what's the best. What do you think about this?
Well, for me, I think the artificial intelligence can be an interesting tool in the fact that if you have a very difficult program, it starts to kind of make the relationships between what might be needed or possible. But one of the things that I don't think artificial intelligence can do right now is actually put emotion into things. For artificial intelligence, yeah, it will give you 20 possibilities, but it won't tell why one is maybe better or more interesting than another, I think. We never used it so far, just because we think, yeah, that the emotion or your own creativity can be interesting to put in a project.
Well, I guess the software works on like the parameters or the everything you put in it, but it cannot read between the lines. And maybe that's the thing you need in architecture, because the client that is in front of you doesn't know what he wants really. Mm-hmm. He knows, does he even know how he lives? No, maybe also not. So you need that kind of information in between also, and we guess it's not that easy with artificial intelligence. But we're for sure that artificial intelligence will help us with, it will make the world get smaller, I guess. That you can easily conversate with you guys, for example, in the same language, that you have like a software in between that translates everything directly, that puts things that are parameters really into maps. But we have the feeling that the emotion, I don't think we're that far already.
No. But I also don't, I think it's, at the moment, it helps us, or it's changing our lives in a lot of things, artificial intelligence. But on the other hand, right now, you see that there's, at one point, people go towards that. But on the other hand, also people try to get away from that at some points. So the ability to escape from that is important for people, and you can also see that in the fact that we have the feeling that the crafts in some way are coming a little bit more back. So you have the artificial intelligence that helps you in some points, but the craftsman that does something in what I that does something with his hands comes back again. So we have the feeling that it's getting both ways, and one strengthens the other.
So I have the big fear that maybe 70 or 80% employees of a big office will be in the next, I don't know, 10, 20 years out of jobs because artificial intelligence could easily do what we do there, because most of the time it's just drawing details, for example, that you can program. And what happens to us? Because this is, so how can we prepare ourselves that there's also a place where we can stay? What do you think? How can we protect or prepare?
But maybe you're right that in some points, like you say, for example, for the rendering, things that actually you don't need people.
No.
But having the crafts, the materials on the right thing, I think we kind of need people to do that, to do
but
so.
Those are the really rare creative heads.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot all be the one really amazing creative head. So, but it's interesting what is going to happen in the future.
But I guess also with artificial intelligence, you also has like the self-learning systems, but they always need input. It's never like you have the button on the computer and solve it. It always need to be written also, artificial intelligence. So I guess maybe also there you need people that give the right kind of information.
But it's true, as you say, I mean, these people in a way don't need really to be architects. In a way, if they are ITers, it's more, it's they can do the programming. Yeah, it's a good question. If even the big offices, because I don't think that will happen in our office because we are too small and too close towards a project, but it's maybe true that in these big offices, people that make the 3D models, that do the renderings, that make the physical models, they in a way it's possible to replace them. But to me as well, even the physical model made by hand by someone is most of the time more beautiful than a model that's done by computers.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's always a matter of choice. It's like you can get the benefit of some artificial intelligence, but it's like when you buy some industrial piece, you will always enjoy the feeling of something handmade. Mm-hmm. So let's say that an architect, I mean, if I go to you guys because I want that you made a house for me and I want that you reflect the feeling and the needs that I have for this house, it can never be something comparable to a product done by an artificial intelligence. But of course, this, as you say, it can be related. In your case, residential building, you want the help and you want that an architect and someone that you choose help you in this process. Of course, in a bigger scale office that for other kind of typology of building, then can be tough. But we will see.
I think you're right that it's actually also a matter of choice. That if you're the head of that company and you think only about numbers and getting as the productivity as high as possible, then of course artificial intelligence might help that. But I'm wondering how many different buildings you will make, because then you will kind of choose one language between the artificial intelligence, and I'm not sure that will last forever.
I don't know, I'm probably naive or too romantic, but yeah. I think that artificial intelligence can never replace some real physical person, at least in my point of view. Of course, in the optic of a company that works with numbers, that might be different.
Mm-hmm.
But we will discover.
Yeah, I think an architect is creative enough to adapt. Maybe we have the same. It's for me, it's not something that can be stopped. It will. It is coming, and it is right over there. But maybe they, with the first version of AutoCAD, they had the same feeling. You need less people because you work more productive when you design something with AutoCAD. We have adapted to that. I guess maybe I'm on the same course as you. Too romantic, maybe. We will adapt also.
Do you think the meaning of being an architect has to be changed?
That's the question, is how, what's the meaning of being an architect?
Again, very difficult.
Yeah, very difficult question.
Because you work in an environment that is in change, society, people, ages, whatever, you also need to adapt to that kind of change.
And how do you do that? Is that just done by, I don't know, if you want to design in those days really, how you say, good architecture, don't you have to be also a physic or a biology professor or chemist or designer or whatever, all together wrapped up in one? Or you work interdisciplinary the whole day? Because well, I think architects only do just really small things of everything.
Yeah, that's true. So it's true. In a way, you have to Surround yourself with people that have knowledge about things that you don't know. In the buildings are so much there's so much techniques for now in buildings that it doesn't actually, it's necessary.
Maybe too much.
Yeah, as an architect, you don't need to know everything about plumbing, so you need to surround yourself with people. I think you need to do that.
Not only intern, I mean, in the office, you need to surround yourself with good people, but also on the working site, because otherwise it doesn't happen. It stays on paper. You need to always motivate everyone. You need to explain. You need sometimes even pushing the lines or pushing the people somewhere they never been, just to see what happens.
And also trust is an important weight in this process. I don't know, do you always work with the same engineers?
No, because what you say is true. We try to tell our clients that a building process which is interesting and nice to have is done with people who always with the view in the same direction, and that all really want to do that project. It doesn't make sense to have a project where it starts with a fight, for example, with a constructor that, for example, says, yeah, I think we should do it this way. Most of the time we have a really good reason, for example, that if a building detail that we'd want to do it that another way, that's because of we have a reason for that. On the other hand, we don't need to be, if someone that does plumbing or, for example, ventilation says, this is a better system, we will always listen, most of the time listen to them, because they are the specialists in what they do. Mm-hmm. But trust and having fun on a project, that's really coming together in a way.
We're always trying to make a team. Everybody's there with the same reason to make a good project. And building is about emotions. It's always, there's some problems here. It goes, there's a lot of costs in it, financial, also for the clients. So you need to deal with those kind of emotions.
Let's say the emotions are different in the whole process. Only a good emotion at the end, but the process itself, it's complicated.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I'm really sorry, but I have to go back to artificial intelligence. One last question. Then I really stop.
Okay.
But can you imagine a way how artificial intelligence can help us solve the climate change or help us? Because it's right here, it's now happening, and nobody's doing anything. So how can you imagine a way of artificial intelligence helping us with that?
Well, I actually think that artificial intelligence can mean a lot in that, because the investigation in materials, like the discussion about concrete, for example, now, we know that in Belgium, there are engineering offices, they are working on building a house now without any cement in the concrete. And I think in that kind of way, there's a lot of artificial intelligence can mean a lot, because they're faster in thinking and calculating these kind of things.
Can you say the name of this office?
I think it's Mouton doing it right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is just like personal curiosity. We can.
Yeah, because I'm quite curious as well right now, because But it's true. I think there it's and what's also good is that, for example, the artificial it should help us on an easy way to kind of create something where we can see that if we do building, that where our products come from, and also calculate the cost and the ecological cost of that, because we get materials and they sometimes say they're quite local, but we don't really know that. And if everything would have a stamp and it's tracked on the right way, you could also find a lot more in that.
Yes, because we produce so much trash. All those batteries for electric cars, the process of doing them is so... I don't really get the...
No, but it's for example, in Belgium, we have now we're moving everything to electricity. And so everybody needs to have this photovoltaic elements on their roof, for example. But they say that they are green. But on the other hand, they are never green because the materials that are in there are not green at all. So there's a bit that's a bit. And then these houses where they have a lot of these things, then suddenly these are ecological houses. But if you calculate the real ecological cost of such a house, it doesn't make sense to put them on the roof.
Exactly. Or now we're not allowed to put 20 centimeters of insulation on the facade. Now it has to be 30. And then it's a really ecological house. But no, it's not. The process of producing this insulation in China is just horrible. I'm not sure where this is going. And who does those rules? And
it's true, these rules, and that's why we also not, we make, in a way, it's as we say, quite energy neutral houses, and as they are called in Belgium, of course.
Yeah. But we have passive houses, but not something it's not something we want to brag with or is part of our brand. It's logical. We think as an architect to think about the questions of today.
But for example, we also never over insulate because having one in Belgium, it's with points, and then you can start to add more insulation, and then your points get down. But you need to have a lot of more insulation to get really little points getting down. So then we say no, it doesn't make sense to do it because the ecological cost of insulation is a lot higher than just having what we need.
That's true. And I really love your projects.
Thank you.
I must say again. And I also love the office house that you did. Yeah. It's really nice.
But that's for us.
Everyone who's listening to this podcast to check out your website because it's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Agree 100%. So then last question. What is architecture for you personally?
I know you said a lot, but maybe if you sum it up in one or two sentences, I know it's hard, but maybe.
Yeah, I would say that maybe it's buildings that kind of evoke or strengthen, for me then, positive emotions for the visitor or inhabitants.
Nice sentence.
Yeah, I agree completely with that sentence.
The answer was too good. We have to just agree. Good,
I cannot go over that for that for sure.
Okay. Thank you very much being on the show.
You're welcome.
We were really lucky that you said yes finally.
Yeah, it took some time.
And that you had finally time.
Yes, indeed.
No, thank you for your interest. Thank you for having us.
Of course, it was a pleasure.
Thank you.
This was this week's episode. We really hope you liked it as much as we did. If you have comments, suggestions, critic, please let us know. And till next time on What's Next. Ciao, ciao!